You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Okay, just so everybody knows, this is not rehearsed, okay? This is not coordinated. Okay, so joining me is the one only, from the great state of Texas, a happy and proud Texan, Mike Musselman. Gunner, what's up?
What's going on, man?
Nothing. You guys are one game out of first place in baseball. How do you feel about that?
How many games they played? Two?
One. Yankees won, Red Sox lost. You want to make a comment on that? You too early to comment?
Man, I told you, I don't start commenting until at least mid-season.
All right. Okay, this is what we haven't coordinated. Should the VA be privatized, partially privatized, or left alone? Your thoughts.
Well, okay, it should not be left alone. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Okay.
I think it should be privatized with regulation. Because once you privatize something as big as the VA, people are looking to make a lot of money.
Right. Now, if I told you that privatizing, so essentially, let's just say that the program was, we're going to shift all non-combat injuries, and when I mean non-combat, I mean the VA would still exist, TBI, burns, prosthetics, and mental health. Those would still combat specific injuries that the general population doesn't. For instance, let me give you an example. A guy goes to see a therapist, and she looks at him and says, and this is no shit, this is no shitter. She says, you know, you need to kind of get around the curve on this combat experience thing. It's kind of like breaking up with a girlfriend. Okay? So You would not hear anybody, right, who is experienced in the field of post-combat related mental health say some shit like that. Okay?
Right.
You would not. Now, the sad part is that got said in a VA by a female therapist who was relatively young to a guy who, combat marine from 3-5, who had fought in Sangin. He got up and left, and he never came back. And I don't want to tell bad stories about the VA, but I'll tell one more. And again, this is another 3-5. Jeremiah Workman, right, who's suffering from PTSD, right. He goes to the VA in Quantico, and an Arab therapist, female type, looks at him and says, you want to know the reason why so many of you Marines are suffering from post-traumatic stress? And he said, well, yeah. She said, because you're fighting an unjust war. Right?
And you're still sitting there?
Yeah, you know, let me tell you, lucky for her, he didn't kill her. Okay? He didn't snap by being blindsided in a place that's supposed to give you care, and it's supposed to be safe, and all of a sudden you brass knuckles the dude in the temple from out of nowhere. And so he went and he told people what happened, and she got fired. Okay, so those incidents would be multiplied in the civilian world. Okay? Because those people don't belong in the military. But let's just say that they didn't happen in the VA, and that those specialties were retained by the VA. If you knew, Mike, that the cost of migrating veterans into the Medicare system was 21% more than what you spend on that treatment in the VA, would you still support it?
20% more?
21% more.
No.
You wouldn't support it? Because it's too expensive?
Yeah.
So keep the veterans where they're at.
This is a lot more complicated than.
It's not an easy, let's do this. But I think to most of us, for instance, and I used you as an example and your gallbladder thing. How many years did military medicine misdiagnose that shit?
to 18 years.
Yeah. So Mike's rolling around with every different malady in the world until they take his gallbladder out. And then he's like happy man. When you deal with military medicine and you deal with the VA, you deal with novices. A lot of them are young doctors who don't, and to be a good doctor, you have to see a lot of cases, right? And that's how you make money. The VA compensation rates, if you're going to be a VA doctor, are lower than you can make out in the real world. So why would you go there? So who do we deal with? We deal with novices, and there's some older docs that stay in that system because they want to serve, but they're few and far between. And if you get to see one, you're lucky. Most of them are doing higher things. So 21% though of the VA budget increasing that's not a small number.
Yeah.
But you would get to see you could be seen by your local doctor, maybe your primary care, provider in the civilian world. And it would be the same as Medicare. And so I don't know. And that's what Shulkin, when he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, on his way out saying that I'm essentially been marked because I wasn't down with privatizing the VA. And I thought Shulkin was okay. He seemed to say the right things, but I didn't understand because I do believe that there are certain things, that you should be able to go to your doctor for and be seen by your doctor, and that the Medicare should pay for. Why do I need a private health system for normal my gallbladder? Why do I go to the VA for that? So I don't know. Your thoughts.
Well, I did go to a private. That's the only time I went to a private doctor, and they were like, "What?" So, yeah, it's, I guess I'm frustrated because I don't see, Shulkin was in, it's been over a year, and you don't hear, there's no changes. It's the status quo. I don't get it. If they made me director of that agency, it would be, like I said, Mac, I'm not kidding. The memo would go out to everybody saying, all right, you're fired. You now have 72 hours to prove why you need to work here. Start solving problems. There's only one dog, and it's not even me. I don't even get to say no. The president. Find a way to say yes. Find a solution. Don't lie to me. Don't sugarcoat me. If we can do it on the cheap, fine. And no one gets hurt from it. No one gets worse care or whatever. But if we have to, you tell me what the need, what the requirement is. And I'll go in front of everybody and testify and say, if you want to do this, and I'll be public about it. If we say it's important, this is the cost for important. Whoa! Yeah. So where are we going to put this in, in perspective? The other thing that, and I see things about California, use California, for example, do you have any idea how much money in the millions or billions of dollars that California spends on a social welfare program on its illegal immigrants?
I've seen stories, and it's in the billions of dollars.
And then how much money does California spend on its veteran program? Not in the billions, it's in low millions. It's in the really low millions. So there's that's where the nation is getting frustrated. That's where people don't understand. Wait a second, you're willing to spend $1 billion on the health care of an illegal person who crossed into this country illegally, but yet you're only going to spend $100 on someone who was born here, decided that civil service was their calling. They went to war. They defended, unjust or whatever you want to think of it. But regardless, they took up the cause. They went over there. They got injured. And now you're only willing to spend $100 on this guy? But $1 billion on this guy? There's where the people get frustrated. That's where the frustration lies. And that's what people took Trump's whole thing of, You know, we got to take care of our own before we start looking across and seeing what we can do. And yes, I get it. I would love to help that person out. Love to. But I just can't. Because I need to take care of my own first. You know, if you're just struggling and you're a family of six, and you're just barely making ends meet, and you see another family struggling, yeah, it pains you. But you can't sacrifice your own to help, you know, to do something, and I get it. You know, it sucks, but you got to do what's right. And so the VA, it really needs to be, if they can't fix it, privatize it. But then you got to privatize it with restrictions, because people will be chomping at the bit to make millions off of that program.
I think,
but
that,
then it comes down to the whole thing. I mean,
but you know, I think
companies.
But I think you kind of lay out the broader view of it in terms of there are perils. Right on both those courses of action. So to privatize, there are private corporations out there licking their chops to get their hands on the ability to access another insurance program and build the shit out of it, right, and make more money.
Yeah.
Right. And so
absolutely.
But what the VA system hasn't been able to show that it can do with the choice program is to run a system like that. And do it efficiently. The big problem with the choice program, you know, if you read about it, and I was reading about it earlier, is that, you know, it's supposed to expedite health care. Every step of the way requires permission, and it doesn't come quickly. And so people get frustrated. And so I laughed because I went and had a checkup, you know, I don't know, about a month and a half ago. They referred me to the dermatologist. Dermatology called me after I had called them to make an appointment and said, we can't see you till June. We're going to, you know, refer you via the choice program to a local provider. You'll get an email tomorrow. 2 weeks later, I hadn't received an email. So I called. Hey, I didn't receive anything. Did you guys send it to the wrong email address? Come to find out, oh, no, that's in the head of dermatology's inbox still. He hasn't acted on it. Which is exactly the flaw in the system. Then I get a call back and say, oh, no, we can see you, so we're not going to refer you via the choice system. Okay, when can you see me? In 2 weeks. And so I told the gunner that, and he said, that's bullshit?
Yeah.
But that's good.
Because, like I said,
but that's good, though.
You've already waited a month.
But that's good, though. For me, I mean, it's like 2 weeks, no problem.
No, you're accepting shit.
Well, I know, but that's the system.
If you were to pay cash, Mac, you'd be seen yesterday.
Right. No, if I was going to see a plastic surgeon and was a rich person, right? Plastic surgeons, just so you know, it's elective surgery. If you want to get into a good business, okay, there is no wait time when you get out your credit card and swipe it to get your wife's rhinoplasty done. Okay?
Right.
That's a cash business. Plastic surgery, okay? Yeah, there is no insurance. We don't do insurance. Would you like to give us cash or get your credit card out? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so...
we have financing available.
but again, I was happy with that. Because, again, and so to me, when the argument comes for, well, the VA does it at low cost, but it's not as veterans, you know, they don't say, yeah, I get great health care at the VA. Mike, let me ask you this. I just read kind of a debate in the last hour. I read both kind of sides of it. And the argument for the VA was this team approach that you're going to go and you're going to get seen by doctors. Have you ever, how often have you seen the same doctor twice at the VA?
Oh, you never have.
And again,
it's always a new guy.
This is uncoordinated. Mike and I didn't rehearse this. I haven't seen the same doctor. The only time I've seen the same person is my therapist at the vet center. All right, Bill McPherson.
Right.
That's the only time. Okay. But if you go just to be seen, yeah, you're not going to see the same person. And that's when you had your little episode with the dude who wanted to do, you know, who questioned your injury.
My back problem.
Yeah.
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 Without reviewing me or just read my 3 pages. Oh, I've diagnosed you that you don't have a back issue. Really?
And so now contrast that when you ask veterans, okay, would you rather just go see your normal doc and have him treat you? You get it for normal shit? Yeah, absolutely. Now, Mike, you get your Botox. Is that through a private provider or the VA?
Oh, that's private. VA won't do it.
So, see, that's the kind of shit that pisses people off.
Yeah, it you know, and for the large part, it solved the problem. It fixed it. The VA's answer was to keep me on these anti-seizure medication that makes me feel like shit all day and I has no energy. You know, that was their solution was, oh, you just need to up the dose. And that's what they would do. So when I started getting headaches back again, VA came back and said, well, how much are you taking? Well, I'm taking 70 milligrams. I'm taking 10 pills. And they're like, okay, you know, or 7 pills. Okay, we're going to up the dose to 120. And so then I asked them, well, does the pill come in any other form? And they're like, no, it's only 10 milligrams. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I never question. I never research it. You know, I just take it face value. And then when I went and saw the neurologist, the private neurologist, and he's reviewing my case, and he's like,
why did you do that?
What the hell?
What, yeah. What prompted you to go see a private neurologist, and then how did you pay for it?
I called my insurance and told them, and they said, okay, we'll cover it.
What insurance?
Humana.
So you have Humana. Is that through your wife's work?
No, that's through retired.
Oh, okay. So, okay. And that's part of...
I pay a little bit extra.
Right, right. Okay. Explain that to everybody, how that works when you retire and your healthcare choice.
So your healthcare choice, you know, you could pay the bare minimum and be covered and, you know, and just get by. Or you can pay a little bit more and then get just a little bit, you know, and better coverage because they are. They're good. And, you know, so I elected to do it because I know I had some health issues. So, you know, it's still cheap. It's still a lot cheaper and it's still better than going through my wife's work. Because if I went through my wife's work, it'd be a whole lot more money and not much better care in the end. So, but my neurologist looked at my treatment and was just dumbfounded. He said, how many are you taking? I say, I'm taking 12 of these pills, 120 milligrams. And he goes, first thing he said was, why didn't they prescribe you the 100 milligram and 210? You know, I said, well, because they said it only comes in 10. And they go, no, 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 no. And they showed me. It comes in this, 10, 25, 50, 75, 100, 150. But, and he said, you shouldn't be taking that large of a dose this quick, because all it's going to do is then, you know, your body's going to become immune to it, and you're in 3 months down the road, you're going to have to double the dose again. And then within a year, you're going to be maxed out. You can't go any further. And then your body, you're going to have to come off of it, you know? And I was like, great. And then he goes, yeah, then your symptoms get worse, you know, the side effects get worse. And I'm like, because they never talk to you about with the side effects, they,
right.
You know, right. Read the bottle. It may cause nausea. So,
and again,
he was really kind of dumbfounded. You know, it's kind of like, oh God.
And that's when he recommended the Botox thing and said, why don't we try this?
Well, he said, you know, I use Botox, and I went to him because. He's one of the leading guys that use Botox with huge success.
All right. And you had heard about it? How?
Through a friend of mine.
Okay.
At church. Yeah. He said, you know, I've heard about this guy. They didn't use him for that. But, so I mean, what do I have to lose? Life sucks it is. Might as well, you know, give it a shot. Within the first, like I said, he said, usually it takes, a few days, very few patients, immediate effects, but I can't describe it more than, like I said, the next morning when I woke up, I felt so clear. My thoughts, my vision, my eyes didn't hurt. It's just like the air felt so much fresher going into my lungs, man. I felt like I was a new person. And then I got mad. Because, you know, I'd been playing with this since 2004. And, man, it really pissed me off. Really, it really, really pissed me off. And then when I started, you know, still going to VA, and someone from the VA said, well, if your headaches are cured, then, you know, you might come down on your percentage of, and I'm like, what? You're not cured. What are you talking about?
And so, you're telling them that you're pissed, right? And somebody responds, well, if your headaches are cured, then we can drop your disability rating.
Yeah. Which got me more pissed.
Man.
And that's the game we play, man. Game we play.
So you can see, so that's just one example. And but the basics are this. You don't see the same doctor ever, right? It's not like you go walk in and he says, hey, Mac, how's it going? You know,
the only guy you see is the person that checks you in at that office. That's usually the same guy or gal.
Yeah, that's the administrative person that you know. Well, who am I going to see today? Oh, you're going to see so-and-so. Okay. And, you know, it's different. It's somebody different. And so to me, it doesn't make sense to me intellectually that now it may cost more. And then the question is that a good thing or bad thing? Because what we're going to do is we're going to eliminate this requirement to unscrew the VA. We're going to eliminate that. And right. So is that a good thing? Do we think that's a prudent course of action? And here's another argument for keeping the VA's facilities. If we ever go to a high conflict war, a high casualty conflict/war, we're going to need those. We're going to need those VA facilities to treat a lot of wounded people as they come through the hospitals, are medically discharged, and have to be moved to the VA. So we really shouldn't get rid of that. Do you buy that, or is there a way that we could pare down, I would say, the general practitioner side of VA medicine, farm that out to Medicare, right, keep our specialties, but keep bed spaces at a lot of facilities around the country, in case we need those things. Do you think those are not? Do you think that combination is not doable?
I think it's doable. Again, it's got to, the right people got to be in charge of this. Otherwise, right. It's going to go south.
Right.
And we'll see. This admiral, you know, the problem with putting a doctor in, an admiral, you know, who's been a doctor in the Navy his whole life, is he's really not a Navy officer. He's really not in the military. He wears the uniform. He's gone on some deployments, but he's never been in a situation where he understands the struggle.
What do you mean the struggle? You know, what struggle?
The struggle of care. I mean, as a doctor.
You mean as an administrator?
No, he's probably been an administrator, but he's never been on the other end. He's never been that average Joe sitting in the waiting room seeing the problems and talking to the people that are giving the stiff arm. You know, I always say that the director, put a some guy in charge as the director or the secretary of the VA, but there should be a board that are actually the own, they actually make that guy the figurehead. But then there's a board, there's a committee that actually runs six people or whatever. And then those guys are the guys that are double amputees. They're people that are actually in the system. They've been through the struggles. They know what it's like. They know where the problems lie. They're willing to go out and face it head on. You know, a lot of these guys, like you're this guy that you talked to at the vet center, is a therapist, good guy, right. You know, he's a rare commodity. He's a very rare individual. And I hope he knows that he is, because that's not the way it is.
No, it's why he stays. You know? It's why he stays. He, you know, Bill.
But those guys should be in charge because they know the recipe for success.
But they're not. And they roll their eyes. You know, after you become friends with your therapist because, you know, you have similar life experiences. You know, he was a Special Forces infantry guy at Marble Mountain.
Yeah, he's walked it before.
Yeah.
He's been there.
And I was really lucky in terms of the guys that I walked in and just got by chance, both of them Vietnam veterans, and they're awesome. And you know, one of them passed away, and one of them, though, you know, I still consider a friend. And he would tell you, I mean, because of the burden you feel, because you're connected to this tribe, it's not just your job, right? He's in at 7 in the morning, and he's still working at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night because of the caseloads. Now he can either he can turn somebody away, but you're dealing with their post-traumatic stress and other mental health issues and their life, so it's not in his nature. And
it's very difficult. I had a therapist when I was in Virginia, and she worked up at Bethesda. Great lady, fantastic lady. You know, married, kids, never in the military. Doesn't know anybody other than her patients that are in the military. But within probably, you know, 4 or 5 months of going up and talking to her, I felt like I was also the therapist, because as I was grilling her and asking her questions, you know, her life story started coming out, and she's divulging it to me of this whole, you know, like, yeah, I got into this. I really wanted to make a difference. I just don't understand sometimes. You know, and so she's given me all this information, you know.
Right.
So that was an odd, because she didn't help me. I felt like I helped her a lot more, you know, trying to understand military people, because that was the biggest thing. I don't really, because, you know, I figured out real quick, I asked her right off the bat, was, you don't understand us, do you? She's like, huh? And then you don't understand us. You don't understand our way of thinking. You've never been there. You've never done this. And you know, why is that important? Well, so we went through that whole reason of why it's important. And after a while, I gained her trust, and she would confide in me, you know, her feelings. And then, like I said, there was times where I felt like I'm on the other side. You know, I'm on that side of the desk. I should be listening to you. And then the other therapist I had was great relationship, because her husband was a Marine. He deployed. She'd been through some of it. You know, he wasn't a combat guy. He was some logistics guy. But still, you know, the threat's there. She had to go through it. But we had a really good understanding, because, I let her see who I really was, because, you know, like the first day, I told you this when she walked in, she said, feel free to sit anywhere. You know, so we walk in her office, there's like four chairs, two sitting around this table in the corner with this little water feature. I can obviously tell that's her area that she likes to sit in, and they're exactly the same. Her desk chair, which was really nice, leather, leak court, you know, and then the chair on the other side of the desk. So she said, feel free to sit anywhere. And so I went over and I sat in her chair in her office, in her desk chair, and then kind of wheeled it over there. And she looked at me with the thing and started writing. And I said, you know why I did this? She goes, I have an idea. And I said, well, let me tell you. I sat here because this is the chair that the person is that sits in this office that runs the show. That is the important, this is the important chair. That's why I'm sitting in it, because I want you to understand that I am in charge. And so you kind of leaned back and I said, yeah, this is going to be one of those, after you're done with me, you can write a book on. And she was cracking up, man. We got along.
But again, so this is just, two people's experiences. And when you put this together, person after person that has the same experience, right? And this is why, I was going to say Marines, but that's why veterans get so frustrated with the VA. You go in, you get seen by somebody who doesn't really know you, who looks at your chart and hands you a bag of 9 medications that says, okay, take these and go to group therapy. You're not helping me solve my problem and deal with it.
Skype therapy. Remember I told you they were trying to put me on Skype.
Skype. Yeah. Yeah. Skype. Why not? What the hell? And so, but people, and that's why these other places like Boulder Crest Retreat and all these other organizations that are saying, look, we don't want to be medicated anymore. Mike, what were you like when you were taking that much medication?
Oh, I was an ass.
And let me tell you, Mike's a fun guy.
Short temperature.
Right. He can tell. He's funny. He's got a quick wit. He walks in the room, right? You could tell when he walks through the door, right? He's moving his head. He's looking. And you're like, oh, Gunner's in a good mood. And it's fun to be around him. When you're that drugged up, what did you feel like, though?
You just have no motivation to do anything. You just feel, you're in a bad place.
Zombie.
Yeah. Not a good place to be.
Mike, how many times have you heard this? I didn't go to the pharmacy. I walked out of that place and I never went back.
No, I don't hear that as much as I wish I would hear that. A lot of people just, they do what they were told because it's a position of authority. So they follow the doctor's order. The guys that tell me that, like Mike Wishnia and Workman and those guys, they finally just said, screw this. Because the problem with our vets is then to escape all of this. See, it's a compounding. It's a circle of effect because you start taking these drugs. It starts making you someone you're not. You're not fun to be around. Then you start isolating yourself from your family. Your family becomes more hostile towards you. Then that causes that rift between there. So then you escape that. Then you go to alcohol. And then that compounds. Then people at work, you're late, you're not performing well, and then you start to talk some friction there, and then to escape that, and then once that circle, it just becomes faster and faster, and the faster it goes, more friction, you start burning. And that's the problem with our guys, is if you just, and it's one of those things that you can't just stop, let's say, I'm going to stop drinking. No, you got to go to the root of the problem, and in most of these cases, it's the medication. Once they get off the medication, it fixes everything. And it's sad to see some of these guys be affected by this. And that medication doesn't make you better, because over time, that medication destroys your body. It destroys your mind. You start losing who you are, and you start this metamorphosis, which is not a good metamorphosis, because you're in that cocoon state, and by the time you come out and emerge from it, you're unrecognizable. And if it's too late, you can't rip through that, and you metamorphize into whatever, then you'll never come back to be that same person, and that's when marriages are ruined. Children separate from their, don't have anything to do with the father because they don't recognize you anymore. And that's the true sadness of this whole ordeal that we're talking about, is it's not just affecting the life of one person, Mac, not the vet. It's It's the children of that vet. It's the spouse of that vet. It's the family of that vet. It's the friends of that vet. And then they go out into the in society, and they are that bad. Then they have bad experiences, and then they grow up with bad experiences, and they get, you know, so it's just a passed on. It's got to stop.
But again, you're going to a system where you don't see the same person twice,
personalized.
I would tell you where their standard response is increase the medication, change the medication.
Yeah.
It is a prescription heavy organization, and I would tell you, especially relative to mental health, and I will tell you that I've heard it from especially younger guys. They go there, right? Big hospital, a lot of old people. It's kind of like going to the zoo for the first time.
Right.
What am I doing here? Right? Old guys in red hats rolling around talking to you. Hey, you want to join? No, I'm good. And you go in, and then they hand you the bag of drugs. And I told the story about one of them, a PFC who was blown up, had traumatic brain injury, and wasn't able to make the second deployment with 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. He saved 20-something Marines and about 11 Iraqis when he jumped up after a vehicle-borne IED went off at the entrance to their compound in the middle of Ramadi. He stands up with no order, sees a water truck coming through the smoke, and he knows that's the big one. Without any orders, he engages the truck. It blows up and knocks two buildings down, right? And for that, he got a Navy Com with a V. Right, you jump on a hand grenade, you save one dude, you get the Medal of Honor, but you do everything right, you get a Navy Com with a V. So he goes to the VA four separate times, sees four different people, gets four different prescriptions, and then he just stopped going.
Yeah.
But that's not atypical, especially for young guys. What they want is they want to find Bill McPherson, who says, listens to you for about half hour and says, hey, can I tell you something? And you say, yeah. And he says, you're a fucked up dude. And with that, you both laugh, right? But you're in his room. He's got his I Love Me shit up from when he was in this infantry unit, you know, with the cross swords. He was in this cavalry unit, you know, infantry with the cross rifles, cavalry unit with the cross swords. You know the I Love Me stuff. It's home. And they deal with you in a therapeutic way, not a prescription medical way. Okay, you got to do this, okay? When you feel this happening, okay, think about doing this. Disconnect that, okay? Get yourself out of that, physically remove yourself from that position, right? Hold your wife's hand, right, and go to a different place and teach you coping skills and how do you deal with that. And so it's not like when we talk about the VA, I would tell you that most of us, there's people that have good and bad experiences there, no doubt. But it's not like the care is such high quality that we want to seek to preserve this separate system for general practice type of stuff. For instance, just consider this. Mike didn't have a choice because he was being seen by military medicine because he was on active duty. But since, what would you say, 2002, 2003, you've been dealing with this?
Yeah. Actually, it was 1999 when I had the accident where I was in LEV, the brakes locked up when we were hauling it, and the force of me hitting the turret ring and being ejected out of the vehicle ruptured my lining in my stomach, and it really screwed up my intestines. I was in the hospital for a few days. They were going to do some surgery. They elected not to because then it just would have been a total mess in your intestines.
No, Mike, this is after the other car accident, right?
Oh, the car accident was, yeah, way in the
80s, right? Okay.
Right. Yeah.
I'm familiar with your medical history now. So
broke my neck in 87.
So this is just standard, stories from guys who've dealt with the VA. So I don't know. I think Mike sums it up pretty well in that there's perils on both sides. And you got to find some middle ground that allows veterans to get, you know, treated by their provider and pay for it, yet retain the unique services that the VA provides and maybe retain the facilities just in case. There ought to be a way to do that. And if it costs a little bit more, so be it. So be it, mm-hmm. because I don't know that you're ever going to, because of the wages that you pay the VA, you're not going to unscrew that organization.
Right. And that's what it comes down to.
Right.
Money.
And so to me, if by migrating this into the regular insurance, it may cost you more, but you're at least going to deal with the problem and you have a choice. If you don't like that doctor, go to this doctor and you'll find something that ultimately works. And I think this attempt to, and then the VA concentrates on, you know, prosthetics, TBI, post-combat related mental health, burns, and maybe long-term, you know, care,
yeah, life care.
For veterans who can't afford any other form of support before they pass away. Maybe that's what the VA concentrates on, and their budget's downsized, their payroll's downsized, you know. And so I don't know, but it's not the optimum solution now, and I don't know that we should be afraid of partially privatizing the VA. I don't know, but Phil Mendel.
No, but you got to be careful.
Right.
The road you go down to privatize, man.
I'm with you. But again,
never come back.
But again, you're a good example of you had the choice as a veteran, retired veteran, to go see a private physician, and it's changed your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But again, you pay for that. But if more veterans had those kind of choices, I think veteran quality of life would be better.
Yeah. And, you know, and I tell people, honestly, Mac, and I don't mean to kid around, but going to this doctor, getting the Botox, it ultimately saved my life. It really did. Because there were times, man, and I told, you know, mm-hmm. And I told my therapist that, you know, I don't know how much longer I could have gone on with that kind of pain. Because it sucked. It sucked like there was no tomorrow. I mean, every day. What do you have to look forward to tomorrow? Oh, I'm going to be bedridden and in excruciating pain, probably on oxycontin or oxycodone, just to take away, you know. And then you're taking, you know, 200 milligrams of oxycontin a day. And, you know, so what happens to you again? Then in 6 months, you're taking 400 milligrams. Or you're taking Demerol. Or, you know, pick a drug. I think I have been injected or consumed about every prescription narcotic there is. Yeah. My doctors joke about it. You know, they're like, you know, when they look at my record, they're like, oh, I've seen you. Wow. Oh, okay. You okay? And then, you know, they kind of put their glasses down and they're like, so you're new to this. You know, yeah, I'm new to this. And they're like, okay, well, you know what the effects are going to be. Yeah, I got it. You know, just go. So, and, you know, and I'm, shit, and I have all my limbs.
Right.
You know, I'm not suffering. Or guys that I know that have had TBI where they lost a portion of the brain. You know, where they're basically on morphine for life just to alleviate the pain. So it comes back to his skin, his quality of life. You got to give these guys a quality of life that they deserve.
And they shouldn't have to brawl with you to get it.
No. They went to war, volunteered, and they went out there. And you know the main reason is they knew that they were going to get taken care of. They knew it. They knew if they got hurt on the battlefield, guys like you and Rudy and Metro would come and get them. Guys like, you know, our dust off pilots would sacrifice their own lives to get them off the ground. Guys like some of those fantastic surgeons that were out there, you know, on Bastion and Leatherneck, you know, would perform amazing surgeries Because those guys, you know, and I'm not kidding you, there's a lot of really good doctors out there. And they weren't always, they did a short term and then they go back. You know, and the doctors realized that they knew that in their profession, you know, if they're a vascular surgeon, there was no better training than to be a vascular surgeon in Bastion or Letterneck when you're doing vascular surgery on people 3-4 times a day, 7 days a week, for 6 months, 7 months. That's 10 years of experience in 7 months. And so other people benefit from that because that dude comes back to the United States, goes back to the private practice, and now saving countless civilian lives with the practice and the experience that he has. So it's a win-win. I get it. But now that there isn't that need anymore, there's not that requirement, people are doing their own thing. You know, it's just, it's not a lucrative thing. Because I get it, the doctor's got to make a living. He's got to pay off those loans. You know, 11 years of medical type schools and internships that he's got to pay off. I get it. I'm not blaming him. You know, then the nurses, got it. You know, the equipment people that make the machines, the CAT scans, the MRIs, so these, you know, delicate robot things that can now do surgeries from the different room. You know, I got it.
Right, right.
But there's got to be some equal balance in there. And someone's got to be, you got to have adults at the table making adult type decisions. And, but in the end, you got to do what's best for the quality of life of that kid.
Why do you think, Mike, that the veteran service organizations are adamantly opposed to privatization? Off the top of your head.
Oh, because they're going to lose money. That's a livelihood. You know, they're going to lose money. When anybody's ever opposed to anything, it's because of money. I'm opposed to the insurance or the rates going up. Why? Because I'm going to pay more in my house or whatever. I'm opposed to the credit card rates going up. Why? Because I'm paying more in interest. It's always about money. Or it directly affects you. And that's really, in my eyes, why the biggest these people are really upset about this, because in the end, they're going to lose money.
Yeah, one of the articles in the debate that I read made that point, that the guy who wrote it said, hey, I'm a Vietnam vet. Well, Vietnam veterans aren't in bed with the VSOs like World War II and Korean veterans, and the guys who have historically been running the VSOs have been World War II and Korean veterans. They had a different experience than we've had. He said, but I'm getting old now. He said, and I want to be seen by my doctor. And he told the story of a veteran's long-term facility for a guy in Irving, Texas. He had to go to Houston because that's the only place they had a bed for him, 250 miles away from his home. Well, he and his wife are retired. They can't afford for her to go to Houston and live in a hotel. And so she waits for 3 months for a call that says he's passed away. You can come get his body now. And that's exactly what happened. And that's how he died. He died by himself in a facility with his wife not near him because they couldn't afford that. And so, you know, when in their hometown of Irving, Texas, there was, you know, six places that were assisted living facilities that if insurance would have paid or they would have had that option, he could have died with his wife at his side. And so it's, you know, these kind of choices, and I've got an email here that says, X and Y, a husband and wife, shot in the head. He was shot in the head in Iraq 10 years ago. The DOD did great, VA not so much. And so, yeah, it shouldn't be that way. So again, I don't, when you look at why VSOs are so adamant against it, and you look at the quality of care that gets delivered, and you hear Mike and I just talking about our random experiences with the VA, you know, in my opinion, it's a head scratcher. If it was Mayo Clinic, right? If it was Cleveland Clinic type stuff, we'd be like, yeah, don't touch the VA. We'll kick your ass, man. Out of my cold, dead hand, you'll get the VA. And, you know, you hear that. But it's not that way. So I don't know how you can push back that hard. And now we're going to increase, you know, now, for instance, VA funding got increased 8.5% either last year or the year before. Okay. And now we're going to increase it again. Well, let me say this. The study I saw said that it would increase 21%. Well, now 21%, you've already gone 8.5%. And let's just say you increase it another 6%. We're only talking a 7% increase from current spending levels as you try to unscrew your system. Well, at that point, come on. We're talking
about
watch.
But, you know, I looked at, it was probably a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, when I looked at something came across my inbox and I opened it up and I read it. And it was about where that money actually goes. The increase, it was, you know, like, let's say it was 5%. 5% increase in budgetary spending for the VA. And then when they said, where did that 5% go? It was.
They went to care.
Individual coming in. It was to make the better life for the people working there.
Yeah.
And I was just rolled my eyes again, like, what the hell is going on? You forget why you come to work? Not because you needed this job. That's a secondary or third order effect. I'm glad you got a job. You know, it was to make these guys, their lives better. You understand that? Yeah, I was really taken by that. It was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, no, you know what, we'll do, you know, I'll do some more interviews about this, because it's not, because Shulkin's editorial, as I said, I thought he, you know, he was well-spoken, I thought, you know, the stuff I read, but intellectually, when I see the argument for partial privatization of the VA, it does not make sense to me why we have a separate healthcare system for our everyday general practice type shit. If we did not have that system, you know, when Mike retired, he would have been seen as a matter of course. They would have said, oh, yeah, they've been misdiagnosing this, and here you go. And so, and there's nothing we can do really about active duty medicine, which is a pisser. But once you retire, in my opinion, you ought to have a choice. So, anyway, big plans for Easter weekend, Mike?
No, well, I got my license carry class tomorrow. But, no, Easter is Easter. You know, I'm not a kid anymore. My kid is not a kid anymore. So, you know, I don't do I don't like the big family holidays, bring everybody over. And, you know, like, to me, Easter, kind of like Christmas is lost in translation. So people don't really understand the true meaning of it. So
So you're not, you know, no big plans. You're teaching on Saturday, and then you'll just do family. But you have extended family in the area, right? With your wife's sister or something. What's the family link around Granbury?
My wife's sister, yeah, lives here.
She lives there. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else to report? Anything else to get off your chest?
Nope. That's it.
All right. What are you doing today?
I'm just going over the final preparations for tomorrow's class. And then I got, because my Yelp, my LTC stuff was approved by Yelp. So
tell everybody about your Yelp business.
Just on Yelp, what I do is, I do the reviews. So I'm a Yelper.
So you take pictures and you write reviews of places that you go.
Yeah.
So what is your call sign on Yelp?
What do you mean? There's no call sign.
Don't you have like a name on Yelp?
Yeah, Mike Musselman. So I don't get it. What are you talking about?
Why don't you use like
you must not go on Yelp.
Why don't you use like Larry Stinnett? Your alias.
Mark Simmet.
Mark Simmons. Why don't you use an alias? Like, why would you give him your real name?
Well, because my picture's up there and everything.
Oh.
Because it's, you're a real person.
Oh, so you go in and you take pictures and then you write a review of restaurants or other places too?
Everything.
Places
that I go, you know, businesses, anything on there.
Do you, is there any benefit to doing that from Yelp?
Other than because you use it and people, you know, review and look at your reviews, that's about it. Yeah. So you go in there if you want to go to like an Italian restaurant. So
Sonny's.
You type in Italian and then you go to an Italian restaurant that's got people that are saying good things about it. You wouldn't want to go eat at a place where people are not saying good things about it.
Right.
So that's what Yelp is. So
I know, but there's no, and they don't, you don't get coupons or anything like that if you contribute on a regular basis? There's no incentive?
I mean, you're just sharing information, yeah.
Okay. All right. When are we going to talk about your website?
Let's talk about that next week because I'm still cleaning it up.
The Yelper Mike, review my farrier business. Yeah. Review Montana Man's farrier business.
I have to go up there and then be a customer of it to review it.
Oh, so you just wouldn't, like, hook him up because he's a bro?
No.
That would violate your Yelp, your oath to Yelp?
Yeah.
I like that. You're committed. I like that you're committed to Yelp.
Yeah, I wouldn't just do it just for the hell of it. You know, because he's a friend of mine. No, I'd have to honestly, you know, be part of that business.
Yelp him. And then so ultimately he may not like the review you give him if he's, you know.
I'm not going to say one thing and then, yeah.
Whoa. All right, email. Mac, what's up with the new website you put up? Well, it's the same website. It's, but it's changed a little bit. The look has changed a little bit. Yeah, it's more like I want it to look. You only, you know, when you have a website, there's templates that you use and things like that, and you can tweak certain things, but not all of them are equal. And so found one that I think is more, how would I say, it's more how I think that my particular radio show ought to be displayed. So on when you log onto the front page, what is All Marine Radio? It's the interviews that you do. So instead of seeing like text, right, you'll see now a picture of the Commandant. You'll see now a picture of General Kelly. And so to me, if you're like wanting to listen to interviews and you see those pictures, you're like, whoa, shit, let me take a look at this. There's a picture of Wesley Fox, and in the box with Wesley Fox is the battlefield studies that I've done, and you can kind of scroll through each battlefield study, and they all pop up, so it kind of scrolls by category, and so so it's cosmetically different and hopefully a little bit nicer. So yeah,
right,
yeah. So websites are a pain in the ass though because they're work. And if you want yours to be relevant, you gotta post. I mean, I post on mine every day, but they're work to keep up. No shit. So if somebody says, "Hey, let's put a website up,"
yeah, it's not that easy.
Maybe not. Let's see. Yelp ethics, Montana man saying. Yeah, Mike's an ethical Yelper. Don't think he's gonna just come hook your ass up because you're a bro. So
how many reviews does he have there?
I don't know. How do we find out?
Go to his Yelp page.
He has a Yelp page?
He's got a Yelp business.
It's Salmon Arm? S-A-L? Do you remember where he lives? Salmon something. Salmon Arm, Idaho?
Salmon Creek?
Farrier of Idaho Guild. Ooh. Cougar Basin Farm Service.
Yeah.
That's it.
Cougar Basin, that's it. Yeah.
Now, here's the Facebook page. Thriving in Northern Idaho, American Farrier Journal. Salmon Arm. Is it salmon? Cougar Basin Yelp. How about that? Is that how I'd find it, Mike?
Yeah, probably. That's his ranch, though. So I don't know what his...
Best,
might be his business.
Best cougar dens in Cupertino. What? Oh, that's... No, I'm not getting anything. Cougar Basin, Idaho. Yeah, a little. You throw the word cougar in there, you get some dicey responses. Cougar Basin, Idaho. Yelp. What? And what do I want? Farrier?
Farrier?
Cougar Basin, Farrier. Salmon Arm, something like that.
I'll look it up. I'll
Nothing.
Find out.
All right. That's your task for Monday. All right, man. Happy Easter. Have a good weekend.
All right. I'll talk to you later, man.
Right,
you buddy. Too.
There you have it. Michael Musselman, a source of vast knowledge here, the gunner. He's gone through some serious shit with his, physical stuff. Yeah. I can tell you, it happened to me once, what happened to him, but mine wasn't as bad as his. I got thrown at night. Mike and I was a company commander in a light armored infantry unit. And so, they're about 28,000 pounds, so the vehicles are about 14 tons. So it's at night, and I'm looking through night. I think I was looking through my night vision goggles. Cougar Basin Farrier Service on Yelp. I was close enough. Oh, no, nothing. We get his Facebook page. Nobody's written a review. Those Idaho people must be happy. That's not a bad thing. So we're stationed out in 29 Palms. We're moving at night, and the problem with night vision devices is that they tend to be two dimensional. Okay, so what may be a hole, you can't see depth into it. You can only see that it's a black surface. So it's some kind of depression. Because the ambient light, which your night vision goggles amplify, just shows you a shadow. Now, that hole could be a million feet deep. You could, fall through to China. Boom, you and your LAV come out in Tiananmen Square. Boom! What happened? Konnichiwa! That's Japanese, dumbass. Oh, sorry. What do I say? Not really sure. What's up? Anyway... So, yeah, Lance Corporal Harpster's driving. Lance Corporal Calhoun, Kevin type, abstract artist now, is, Harpster's first name is Fenton. So Fenton Harpster's driving, Kevin Calhoun, the social center of gravity for Alpha Company, 3rd Light Armored Infantry Battalion at the time. He's the vehicle commander. And I'm looking either through binoculars or, so I'm navigating at night because we don't have GPS. And so in the desert, if you don't know what you're doing navigating, it could be a nightmare because everything starts looking alike between the mountains. So anyway, and I'm a pretty good navigator. Never been lost in my life, honestly. So Calhoun's helping Harpster drive the vehicle. In terms of they've got this kind of monologue going on, this dialogue going on between each other about what's this, a little to the right, as they drive at night. Well, what Harpster thinks is a kind of a depression that runs across horizontally across the road in front of us is actually some kind of a trench, right? And we hit it and we stopped. And I don't know how fast we were going. We might have been going, you know, 12, 15 miles an hour. But we all got thrown. And the position I was in, I was like chest deep in the turret. Okay? So I got thrown, and the first thing that hit was my neck against the steel ring of the turret. And the hatch of the turret. And I went straight down. I didn't know what the hell happened. Right? And you weren't expecting it, so you didn't brace for anything. And all of a sudden, and I just remember hearing Calhoun yelling, because the same thing essentially happened to him. And I got knocked silly. And as I stood up on my seat, right, and looked out, Calhoun had taken off his CDC helmet, and he was punching Harpster in the head with it. And I didn't know what had happened. And I'm yelling, "What'd we hit?" And Calhoun said, "This dumb son of a bitch." But, yeah. I mean, and Mike had evidently their brakes function, and they're going, I don't know how fast, I'll ask him on Monday, but how fast they were going. And that just, yeah, skin on steel, no bueno. Anyway, have a great weekend. This program repeats itself momentarily, and then after the program repeats itself a few times today, later on today, early this evening, the Battlefield Study will get thrown in it. So if you're looking for live entertainment over the weekend, you can flip it back here, and we'll do a little bit of the best of over the weekend. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday when we're going to talk to Alex Halling of SoftRep. We're going to catch up with Alex. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on this station. As I said, happy Easter to everybody out there. Be safe if you have some time off and you're headed someplace on a Friday. Good Friday. All Marine Radio, out.